Николай Васильевич Гоголь. Шинель. В департаменте... Ну, лучше не называть, в каком департаменте.
This is the sound of my favorite short story.
Every individual attached to them
now. And now,
the whole of society insulted,
here it is in English.
Quite recently, a complaint was received from a justice of the peace, in which he plainly
back into Russian now.
Не помню какого-то города.
Can we put some music on?
This is how I spend my time in my flat, just absorbing Gogol's words.
Tim, can we put some music on?
My wife hates it. October the 3rd. My name is Tim Key, and I am a documentarist, documentarian. I made a documentary last year, anyhow. I can't remember what the word is for someone who's done that. An important person in the Radio 4 buildings decided I could make another one, and I asked if I could do it about the overcoat. Not my overcoat. No. This is about Nikolai Gogol's The Overcoat, a short story I read 15 years ago that had an enormous bearing on the heavyweight Russian scribblers who followed him. Fyodor Dostoevsky said, "We all come from Gogol's overcoat." Well, it's definitely stuck with me.
The story was published exactly 170 years ago in 1842, and since then, critics and readers have been debating what the message of the story was, or if there was any message.
This authoritative Russian voice belongs to Maria Rubins. She'll be guiding us through the story this afternoon, so it's not just me drooling over Gogol's prose.
It may be about what it means to be human, what it means to be alive, what it means to realize or not to realize your human potential. There is sufficient evidence to support almost any interpretation. That's why this text remains such an enigma and at the same time so easy to read, so entertaining, and ultimately so funny.
The plan, which will clog up the next about 27 Radio 4 minutes, is to find out more about Gogol's The Overcoat, to go on an odyssey. I'm off on an odyssey, love.
Are you wearing that?
What? Yes. What? I always wear this.
I know.
In the department of... But it's best not to mention the department. There's no one more irritable than people in government departments, regiments, courts of justice, and insurance.
Immediately the narrator digresses and begins to tell us all kinds of details, most of them completely irrelevant. But in fact, this is Gogol's typical style. His narrators style themselves as just another character in the story.
So, in a certain department, there was a certain civil servant. His name was Akaki Akakievich.
His name is absurd. He's called Akaki. You meet very few Russians called Akaki.
I thought I'd go and see a professor.
This is one of these obscure saints' names, and it sounds a little like shit.
Yeah.
Literally, it means no shit, Akaki.
This is Donald Rayfield, Russian scholar, Gogol translator, and with a beard so white and soft, you want to shear it from him and make it into mittens.
It rolls a little like Dickens. His surnames always tell you about the character. He's called Bashmachkin, Shoe.
So Shitovich Shoe.
Yes, soft shoe.
It's not a great start to life,
is
it?
And he's doomed.
Akaki Akakievich was born, if my memory fails me not, in the evening of the 23rd of March. His late mother, the wife of a government official... And
October the 9th. I studied Russian at Sheffield University and can still speak it with waitresses. But apart from the language and a party I went to where everyone swapped clothes, reading The Overcoat was the highlight of my time in Sheffield. I wonder why that is.
We have mentioned all of this in order that the reader might judge for himself that the whole sequence of events was entirely predetermined.
He doesn't have all the knowledge, he doesn't have the control over the story. He just tells us a story the way he remembers it, and of course he doesn't remember all the details.
I still wear the same overcoat. That's all that remains. And maybe I should have just joined more societies. I'd never had snakebite and black before, is the truth of it, and so I took a bit of a hit.
He experiences lapses of memory, he digresses, he doesn't complete his sentences. In fact, demonstrates total incompetence as a storyteller.
This is just amazing, this coat. What is this made of? What's this sleeve?
Well, all I can tell you is it's a sheepskin coat made to measure. I don't actually deal with the material. That's done by the guy that makes the coat.
And is this your current tailor?
Well, people come and go in this business. I had three or four made by a man in Hornchurch who disappeared off the face of the earth. I had one made by a guy in Cannes in France who used to be a furrier when he lived over here. Is that what you call them? Furriers?
A furrier. I don't know, it's a new world for me, to be honest.
Okay. They've come in all shapes and sizes, and they've come from all sorts of sources.
But primarily sheep?
More or less from the sheep direct, yes.
The overcoat, a piece of clothing, the most external layer of any human being, something that normally we simply remove. Here, this becomes part of Akaki Akakievich's identity, his destiny, and eventually this attachment to the overcoat leads to his downfall.
The overcoat was the first piece of Russian prose that was genuinely popular, particularly because you can take it at face value as a pathetic story of a little man who's abused by everybody, has this moment of glory which is snatched from him, and he's avenged only posthumously. If you look at it like that, then it's the ancestor of virtually the whole of Russian fiction for the 19th century. You have little people who are abused and posthumously avenged in Dostoevsky, in Turgenev, in Chekhov.
Why do you think Gogol is less well known in Russian literature?
I suppose that the big hitters in Russian literature are big hitters partly because they tell people what to do when they finish reading the book. The Dostoevsky says, go to church and repent. Tolstoy says, give all your money to the poor and become a vegetarian. Or even Chekhov, who's very modern, is like going to your GP, who says, nothing we can do about it. You get old, you die, just live with it. With Gogol, there isn't a philosophy, you can see. It's a dip into a half-crazed world. You can enjoy it, you can be puzzled by it, but it can't change your life.
Yeah.
It could distress you, possibly. It could even unbalance you.
Akaki Akakievich had a peculiar knack as he walked along the street of arriving beneath a window just as all sorts of junk were being flung out of it. This explains why he always bore about on his hat scraps of melon rinds and other such rubbish.
Akaki Akakievich is a very strange individual.
Magic people for the people!
He doesn't seem to have any interest in life. He doesn't pay attention to what's going on around him. He doesn't notice that occasionally a fly is floating in his cabbage soup. He has no family, no friends, no vices, in fact. He only wants to copy documents.
He's one of this army of bureaucrats.
He's a titular councillor.
Yes, that is about as low as you can get. Very low down, yes. He's unlike all previous tragic heroes. He never wants to go above his station until, of course, he wants a new coat. That's what destroys him.
There exists in St. Petersburg a powerful foe of all who receive a salary of 400 rubles a year, or thereabouts. This foe is none other than the northern cold, although it is said to be very healthy. You must know that Akaki Akakievich's coat was an object of ridicule to his colleagues. They even refused it the noble name of overcoat and called it a dressing gown.
At the time, people took Gogol exclusively seriously as an indictment of how the poor were mistreated. And it's only later that they realise you're not in a normal reality. It's Faust and the devil. Faust requires something which he's not supposed to have, and he's prepared to go to the devil to get it and sell his soul for it.
As well as being a kind of a mystical object, it also has a practical value.
Oh, it's a difference between survival and death in a Russian winter.
I'm glad I've got my overcoat.
Yes, yes. Well, it doesn't look quite as expensive as Akaki Akakievich's, if it's that one there.
Sorry?
It doesn't look as expensive as Akaki Akakievich's, that one there, but...
I mean, how expensive do you think it looks?
Oh, I'd have to feel it there. That would be an intrusion. If that's real silk.
Can I ask you, a bit delicate, but how much should one spend on a coat?
Good question.
Is it like an engagement ring?
Well, it can be. You're paying for the material, you're paying for the guy's time, you're paying for him to come and measure you up, which I've always, for the last three or four, I've had them, you know, take my measurements. And I don't want to make any secret of it. The last one I had, I paid £2,000 for.
That's for everything, for the measuring. For
there was no add-ons, that was it.
Oh, he didn't fleece you for buttons?
No.
In some way, his talents are those of a con man, which is a spiel.
Yeah.
In which you bewitch your audience and...
You do constantly feel yourself having the rug pulled from beneath you when you're reading him.
He plays with words, he spins. He'll be today a very, very good stand-up comedian.
Akaki Akakievich thought and thought, and at last decided he would have to cut down on his day-to-day spending, for a year at least. He would have to stop drinking tea in the evenings.
Nikolai Gogol has been called the grandfather of alternative comedy. So I've come to see the father of alternative comedy, Alexei Sale. He's a big fan of Gogol, and also, I suppose, his son.
Avoid taking his personal linen to the laundress as much as
possible. All the details about Akaki Akakievich's poverty are exaggerated to serve as a metaphor for his spiritual poverty. As soon as he comes back home, he takes off all of his clothing so as not to spend money on laundry. All of this is comic, grotesque, and of course does not really have any realistic explanation.
I have quite an intimate relationship with Gogol in a sense, in that it was him, in a way, that got me into comedy.
He spotted you.
Yeah, he ran the comedy store in Donetsk. When I was about 14, our school decided to put on a production of The Government's Inspector, and I was cast in the role of a Jewish merchant. I mean, now it would be registered as a racist incident by Camden Council.
Yeah.
We give him a tray with stuff on it. And what I had to say was, please accept the tray with it. And so the way I did my line was, I said, please accept the tray with it. And I got a tremendous laugh. The first time I'd ever got a laugh on stage.
Wow.
Was thanks to Nikolai Gogol.
Because your background is, you have some Eastern European blood, don't you?
Yeah.
Do you think that that's important in Gogol, the sort of the Russianness of it?
My parents were also in love with this idea of Russian suffering, of Russian sentimentality, of the Russian soul. Mm-hmm. You know, we think we're very original, but if you are writing fiction now or doing stand-up comedy now, all those character types that you think you have nailed, you will see in Gogol. So if you do something about, you know, environmentalists or vegans or pompous political people, it's all there.
And this is a classic in the overcoat. This is the downtrodden, lowly worker.
Yeah.
Just trying to get his overcoat. What do you think about mine?
Is this what you young people call it? Vintage?
Is it vintage?
Yeah. Because it looks like something Dennis Waterman would wear on a date.
That instinct to subvert what you're meant to be doing is a very, very common contemporary comedy thing.
This guy is Johnny Sweet. He's basically a comedian and Gogol lover and man.
His whole approach to narrating it is like he can't be bothered. I really like when he introduces the tailor. He says, it is not necessary to say much about this tailor, but as it is a custom to have the character of each personage in a novel clearly defined, there's no help for it, so here's Petrovich the tailor.
And he's just so fed up that there are certain things you have to do when you write a book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Petrovich was faithful to ancestral tradition, and when quarrelling with his wife, he called her a low female and a German. As we've mentioned his wife, it will be necessary to say a word or two about her. Unfortunately, little is known of her beyond the fact that Petrovich has a wife.
Undercutting the very act of narration, presenting something very poorly, that's what makes it a more truthful experience, I think, because by being honest and revealing how silly the whole construct is, you actually think, well, I can kind of go with you on this one.
And then he criticised my coat.
Of course.
What do you mean, of course?
Oh, nothing. It's fine. What's he on about?
I don't know. He said it was...
awful.
Well...
I'm trying to search for the...
She's not even my girlfriend. She's just an actress. She came to my flat to record these bits.
It's got character.
When I was in the kitchen making tea, I clearly heard her say to the producer that she could never live somewhere like this.
When I am wearing it, quite a few people like to take a photograph on their phone because they identify with the coat more than they identify with me.
I think it's 50-50.
Do you?
Can I ask you what you think about my jacket?
Well, I'm not a great one into leather jackets. I thought they were sort of teenage people who go to rock concerts and things like that I associate with leather jackets. Yours looks pretty well worn, actually. It must be a favourite one of yours because it's taken a bit of a battering.
Because I get quite a lot of criticism for this one from my mother and a lot of experts on Gogol.
I see, okay.
And what people do point out is there's some blood on the collar.
Okay, well, I can't really enlighten you on that. That's your jacket.
I've come to London's West End.
East End.
East End. And I'm going to go and visit a tailor, a man called Clive Fithian, who's a master cutter, because I'm starting to get a little concerned about the comments and sly asides about my own overcoat. Welcome to the Husavina border. Come see what we... April the 43rd, 2000. I feel myself losing focus. I know it's one of those things where a documentary listener would probably say, what are you talking about? You seem very focused on the job in hand. But I can feel it. How can a man make a documentary about the overcoat if his own overcoat is being bad-mouthed and sneered at with each turn? I don't like it. I need to avoid it. Are you Clive?
I am indeed.
I think I've got an appointment to see you.
You have indeed.
And so, Akaki Akakievich decides to go to the tailor Petrovich and asks him to mend his coat.
What could £20 do, do you think, to a coat like this?
Realistically?
Oh, God.
Not a lot. I mean, we're full bespoke tailors.
What I like particularly in this is when he goes to the tailor,
yeah,
and discusses how they're going to make the coat and what it's going to be made of.
Yeah.
You realize a goggle could have worked in Savile Row. He knew an incredible amount about clothes. Anything you could touch and feel.
Right, we're just going through. Oh, he's got... Oh, my God.
This is
God.
A client's overcoat.
Yeah.
The affair progressed more briskly than he had expected.
Oh, wow.
His heart, generally so quiet, began to throb.
This is a cashmere herringbone overcoat, which we've made for a client. Classic double-breasted.
And now we look inside the lining. It's a beautiful pale blue. It's so soft.
It is. It's pure cashmere.
I think you need to measure me up.
There's virtually no love interest ever in Gogol. Women either behave like sort of insects with too many pheromones, or they're hideous old crones. But the word for the greatcoat in Russian is feminine.
So what kind of choices can someone make? And obviously, you'd always have sleeves. I would.
That's the love story. We're told he's in a state of ecstasy about it. He dreams about it. He walks on tiptoe for months so he can afford to acquire it, to marry it, in effect.
So just tell me the price of this one that I'm currently stroking.
The price of that overcoat is £3,500.
And then on the great wedding night, it's snatched from him.
Yeah, I'll take it.
I knew you would.
That's my coat now, said one of the thieves in a thunderous voice, seizing him by the collar.
Two men with moustache approach, and one of them grabs the overcoat and takes away the beloved of Akaki Akakievich. He's completely devastated, and he decides to go and speak to an important personage who could help him in this investigation.
The 86th of Martoba, between day and night. I know I shouldn't finish the documentary with a trip to a tailor's. Also, I'm a bit muddled by what Alexei Sale was saying about the Russian soul, so I'm going to talk to a Russian soul expert by phone.
On perceiving Akaki Akakievich's modest demeanour, the important personage turned abruptly to him and said, "What do you want?" in a brusque, hard voice, which he had practised in front of the mirror for a whole week before being promoted to his present rank.
The thing that Gogol has managed to show as none other, what is wrong with Russia.
Konstantin von Eggert, broadcaster and Russian soul expert.
When you look at the Russian society today and you see the struggles of, say, the Russian opposition, of people who are victims of unjust court sentences and find the officialdom solidly lined up against them, all this you can find in the overcoat 150 years ago.
How important do you think it is to be Russian when reading it? Because I read it and I loved it, but at the same time I do kind of think there's something uniquely Russian about it that I don't completely understand.
I think that to understand Gogol, it's enough to be born unfree. Many people in the West who were born free and whose fathers were born free and whose great-grandfathers were born free will probably find in Gogol a lot of absurdity, a lot of, you know, surreal images and surreal situations. But all of the situations are pretty real to those who, as I did, lived under the communist rule. And you were not allowed to have a car without the state's permission. You were not allowed to travel without the state's permission. The oil boiled down to the state controlling your life.
Do you know who you're speaking to? Do you realise who's standing before you? Do you understand? I'm asking you, do you understand?
Akaki Akakievich's senses failed him. He trembled in every limb, and if the porters had not run to support him, would have fallen to the floor. They carried him out, almost lifeless. But the important personage was quite intoxicated with the thought that his words could deprive a man of his senses.
There is something completely totalitarian in this ability to present himself as a power while he's a nobody. And I think in this respect, Gogol has looked forward to the totalitarian regimes in the 20th century in which appearances were more important than substance. One thing that you find, especially in The Overcoat, is this constant vacuous quest for status. This small-time bureaucrat, Akaki Akakievich, only finds fulfillment in The Overcoat, because it's how you look, not what you are, that is important. That is something that is still very much relevant in Putin's Russia.
And do you think that extends to Overcoat?
To many people, this idea of having, you know, the right phone, the right car, the right wife, the right job, forms part and parcel of their lives. Not only in Russia, in the West too. And I think that Russian young people now choose Gogol because they find him relevant, they find him funny, and they find that he speaks to them because he describes reality they are familiar with.
And he doesn't mind sort of deconstructing his writing and telling people what he's doing.
Sorry. Ricky, can I call you in 10 minutes, okay? Fine, thanks. You know, you'll be laughing. That's my tailor.
No, is it? What does he want? You need to take the call.
Well, you know, I need to pick up a suit. Coming back to what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, sorry. He doesn't mind sort of commentating on his own writing and explaining to the reader what he's about to do.
Yes, absolutely. He plays with his ability to appear and disappear from the narrative very deftly.
The next day, a violent fever showed itself. Thanks to the generous assistance of the St. Petersburg climate, the illness progressed more rapidly than could have been expected. And when the doctor arrived, he found that there was nothing to be done.
Having described the passing of Akaki Akakievich, the narrator announces that that was not the end.
But who could have imagined that this was not really the end of Akaki Akakievich, that he was destined to raise quite a commotion after death, as if in compensation for his utterly insignificant life? But so it happened, and our poor story unexpectedly gains a fantastic ending.
The fantastic coda tells us about a ghost that appeared in St. Petersburg shortly after the death of Akaki Akakievich and attacked various people on the street, taking their overcoats. The police was alerted and put out an order to detain the ghost, alive or dead.
Madrid, 30th Februarius. I'm a writer these days, as well as a documentarianist. I also write poetry, comedy, texts, and flirtatious post-its to my cleaner. And I can see Gogol's influence in it. I try to tinker with reality. I try to tease, to cajole. And I comment and obsess with my own material. His tricks.
The important personage was stopped by the ghost of Akaki Akakievich, and the ghost said,
"At last I found you. It's your coat I'm after."
We notice that he's very assertive, he gets his message across, and in fact, he finally manages to engage in the world. He became a more full-fledged personality after his death.
Unlike Gogol, I find it more difficult to expertly pour things back into an all-too-crisp focus. The next contributor is crucial. I need an expert.
I get asked that question 3 or 4 times a season. Where were you that day in the snow with the sheepskin coat on?
Yeah.
Wickham Wanderers, 1990. There was a freak snowstorm.
John
just
Motson,
in that area.
Half man, half sheepskin. Football commentating national treasure. One of my old sheepskin. If anyone can explain the mystical link between a man and his overcoat, it's him. And what do you think about Nikolai Gogol's The Overcoat?
Well, it's a book I haven't read. But having been privileged to be part of this programme, I shall make absolutely sure that I go out and buy it.
That's fantastic. Hello.
Good afternoon. Is that Mr. Key?
Yes.
Hi, it's Clive here at Alexander Boyd.
Keep talking.
I have your overcoat ready. It's all finished and ready in the shop, awaiting your body.
That's brilliant. When shall I bring my body down?
As soon as you can. Hopefully it will be everything you wish for.
It was, it's difficult to say on what day precisely, but probably the most glorious one in Akaki Akakievich's life, when Petrovich at last brought home the overcoat.
Day 34, T. Month. Early February 349. Oh, boy. It's absolutely gorgeous. I've blown my entire fee on this, but it's actually quite an emotional experience. Emotional because it pains me to feel how happy Akaki was before his demise, and also emotional because it's killing me that I won't have anything to show from making this documentary. Except, of course, I will. I can't stop stroking my flanks.
The day when Akakievich receives the coat is the happiest day of his life. And in fact, one superior official even decides to throw a party to celebrate this event.
That whole day was truly a most triumphant day for Akaki Akakievich. He returned home in the most happy frame of mind, took off his coat and hung it carefully on the wall, admiring afresh the cloth and the lining.
Ta-da! What do you think?
Like, what would a wife think of
it? No, what do you think? As an actress, as Izzy, as you.
It's amazing. I'd genuinely marry you.
Really?
No, I would. You look... How do I pronounce that?
Mercurial. Thank you.
And warm.
Well, don't ad lib.
Sorry. Why don't you leave it there?
The documentary?
Yeah.
I'd love to. But I need to talk about what happens to him after he buys the coat. I don't...
What? Won't that spoil it?
It did for me.
Well, just leave it.
He ate his dinner with great relish, and after dinner he wrote nothing, but lay for a while on the bed until it got dark.
Where are you going?
I'm going to go show it off.
Quite right.
Ta-ra, then.
Ta-ra.
Then he put on his overcoat and stepped out into the street.
Now, I want you to tell me the name of the book and who it's by, because I'm not up with literature like you are, obviously.
It's Nikolai Gogol.
Gogo? G-O?
Gogol. G-O-G-O-L. The book is called The Overcoat.
The Overcoat.
And it's a short story.
Right.
About a man who gets teased for his overcoat.
I see, okay.
And everyone in his office is constantly berating him.
For I've got it. Okay, right, okay.
And he decides to save up.
Yes.
And buy a new overcoat.
Oh, I've got the story. Right, okay.
And when he gets it, everyone really enjoys it.
Okay.
But then on his way home, he gets mugged and loses the overcoat.
Bloody hell.
Magic people for the people!
Tim Key and Goggles Overcoat was written and presented by Tim Key and was produced in Cardiff by Stephen Rajam. Tim Key's wife was played by Izzy Sutty, with readings by Gerard MacArthur.